What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms. All right, welcome back into See Ball, Get Ball. I am your host, David Pollack. Brent Rollins joining me as always. A lot to talk about, like the president dipping his toe in college football is kind of a big deal. El Presidente, Nick Saban. Dipping his toe, obviously, very much in football. New rules, by the way, that will affect your watching pleasure. So you want to learn these now because you're going to cheer against certain people all throughout the year, and you're going to be trying to get your team into the college football playoff. Well, you're going to want to know these rules that are going to continue to change next year as well, because the power influencers, the power brokers will change.
Yes,
But so. That's a good thing. And then we talked about the podcast before, young coaches. Who are the young coaches that really young that you're betting on in the future that you think will be, you know, big names, be very, very successful. But we'll start with, man, hey, how was your weekend, brother?
It was good. I hope Lindsay and you guys had a good Mother's Day, and Miss Kelly had a great Mother's Day, and happy belated Mother's Day one day later to all those mothers out there. But I wanted to know if you saw, to me, which the coolest thing of the weekend. There's two big news pieces of news from the weekend. One, Bill Belichick's girlfriend only got third in Miss Maine. I don't know if you saw that. She got third
in Miss Maine?
Yeah, she was second runner-up. So that's college football news now.
How about Belichick?
A lot more
Belichick
stuff.
Was probably pissed. Like, seriously, all you can do is get third? Like, we wake up and piss excellence. What are you doing getting third?
Yeah, if you're not first, you're last kind of thing, Ricky Bobby says so. But did you see Metallica playing Inner Sandman at Lane Stadium?
Please tell me
you saw that.
Because that, to me,
was the coolest college football thing related of the weekend.
Well, and that's one of those things that you scroll by a lot of things on your timeline. Like, you'll just be like, not football. You know, for me, it's like, not football, not faith, not leadership. Okay, I'm good. I will scroll by it. But when I saw it, I was like, what? And then you think about the significance of that song for that school. By the way, we should do this one day too. Like, the run on the fields and the openings, the best ones in all of the land, no one goes above Lane Stadium. Like, no one goes above Virginia Tech. Like, they are – it is – unfreaking believable. Now, listen, I'm saying there's going to be up there with them, but I'm just saying that whole place goes bananas. Like, it is so, it is such a great entrance, such a unique, like, gym. The fans are just jacked out of their mind. And that song is so emblematic of their program and who they are and what they do, but they go absolutely bananas, Brent.
By the way, Metallica all these years later, still just on it. I saw where it maybe even registered as an earthquake there, because everybody was, I may have seen that. Maybe I didn't. I may have missed that. But I will say, we actually had an earthquake this past weekend. Did you?
We
as in us, as in Northeast Georgia.
Really?
Please tell me you didn't you, did you not see this?
No, I didn't see this.
Okay. So it hit in like somewhere south of Knoxville, and we felt it here at the house. It was Saturday morning, like around 9 o'clock. I don't know if you were home.
I was working out at that time. So maybe that's why I didn't feel it. You felt like that. You felt it legit.
So I fell back asleep and I was like, I rolled. Oh, okay. Time to get up. Well, I was getting ready to get up out of bed and just side to side. And then I asked Deanna, I was like, wait, what was that? She said, and then she's like, did you just, and she, cause she was in the living room and she's like, I think the house just shook. So, and you know, you start looking at Twitter and all that, and it's earthquake, felt it here, all Northeast Georgia. But anyway, so earthquake at Lane Stadium. We actually do earthquakes now in Georgia. That's a thing.
You were sleeping at 9 a.m.
Well, I was awake. I got up, dog, did the stuff with the dog, and then fell back asleep.
Lazy bum at 9 a.m.?
Jeez. Well, hey, we had a 15-inning baseball game 2 days prior that did not end until after midnight, and we like got 2 hours of sleep the previous day.
Not first or last, you lost.
Yes. Yeah. We were bowed out to a really good team in Allatoona. But anyway, what was funny, though, is the last week we talked about, and you had mentioned, hey, the president doesn't need to be involved in this stuff. And it was kind of a
that's not what I said.
Like a joke.
That's not what I said. I said the president
got bigger things working.
A lot more important things to do. Like somebody needs to get involved at a high level, and this needs to get working. It ain't the NCAA, we know that. But I'm just saying, there's a lot going on in our country that needs a lot of attention. I just don't know that I want President Trump's attention in that realm. Maybe
solely right now on college football, but
correct,
he's got more bigger things to worry about. But what was funny about it was kind of like a just a little side comment and a little, you know, just a thing that where he had jokingly said, I thought anyway, jokingly said that. And then you had had the tweet and said, hey, that sort of thing. And Nick Saban should be the one. And then a day later, I think it was almost 24 hours later. So maybe President Trump was scrolling through his Twitter feed and saw you talking about it. Nick Saban gets installed as the committee or the commission on college athletics to address the quote ailing industry. So Nick Saban, and then also somebody that we've talked about on this show this offseason, Texas multi-billionaire Cody Campbell, who is Texas Tech's check writer, check writers, or
so
cash donor. So however,
President Trump, Nick Saban, and Cody Campbell walk in a room. I mean, but where does it begin? Like, it is interesting. I'm not surprised, by the way. And here's Brent. If you talk, I remember 2 years ago at the national championship game. Maybe, I guess longer than that. God, I'm getting old. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, Nick was still. It was the TCU national championship game. So when that was 4 years
that
ago,
moment, it was ago. That moment.
Yeah, that moment. But I remember before the game being on the field with Nick and just talking to him about it and talking to him about like how he said kids are coming in his office and being like, I need a raise or I'm leaving. And just the climate and how bad it was, how hard it was to be a coach and how many things there were going on. To have somebody like him that has been involved in multi-generational football, to me, another guy, Mack Brown, makes a lot of sense. Like, Mack Brown has been around football. He's been on committees. He's likable. Like another guy that's been in both worlds that would be great to pick their brain. Why would you not? Here's the problem. If you talk to any coach about this at an upper level that wants to get something changed or done, okay? Say you go talk to them. If that coach is making $10 million, $11 million, $12 million, every single person that he starts to talk about and talk about a system, blank, tuning them out. Why? Because they're making all that money. You can't say something. Oh, you want the system to benefit you, but you don't want it to benefit the players. And so you have this immediate tug back and forth and pull back and forth. So I think Nick's always been the guy. I've said it for years because he's not in it anymore. Like, he's not at a university. He's not getting paid by a university. Now he has an opportunity to go make change and talk about this system in a way that people would be surprised about probably.
Do you think something like this would actually come up with ideas or unique suggestions that you haven't seen? Because a lot of people put actual suggestions. Heck, I wrote an article back in January 2024 with all kinds of different suggestions on things like eligibility and the structure of college football and how it should be. There's a lot of suggestions out there. Do you think there's anything that maybe they have when you combine the business acumen of Mr. Campbell and then Saban that actually becomes unique and everybody looks at it and is like, okay, I like that. Let's roll with that.
They have to. I mean, they have to have these things because, again, they've lived through it. They've been in it. So I think they would definitely have solutions. But, again, you don't have a model in college football where, like, all I got to do is negotiate with the teams. And then if I negotiate with the teams, now I negotiate with the players' representation. We don't have that. Like, so I think – how do we get closer to that point where we can actually have voices at the table that are in favor of things that have a say for a union, so to speak, for the players that have say for, I can vote for my players. I am a elected official. There's too many universities. There's too many hands in the pie. Like, there's too much going on. So can they filter it, Brent, and get it more seamless? Like, okay, this is what we need to do. The next step is we need to have a coalition and players need to form this together to make sure that they're protected. Coaches need to form this to make sure they're protected. Presidents, by the way, they're very much in this decision-making process.
Yes.
Like, they're doing the hiring. They don't want college kids to be employees. They don't want that because then they can unionize and then they can make decisions. It doesn't help them. So
collectively bargain, all sorts of things with that.
You have to have people that understand all sides. So when someone's talking to you, you can say, oh, BS, right? Like bull crap. No, like you're looking out for you and you can call. And how is Nick Saban not uniquely qualified for that? Like he should be. Now, that doesn't mean everything he says doesn't matter. But here's the beauty of this. Brent, you're in academia, right?
That is correct.
You want to get something done as a professor in school. Like, how long does it take?
Dog years.
Dog years. Forever to get something done. When Trump puts his stamp of approval on there, basically, wham. Like, this crap can happen really fast. So,
yeah,
that's the good news. Because I promise you how this all started. Donald Trump sat down with Nick Saban. They started talking back and forth, started talking about college football, and Nick unloaded about how bad it is. Like, how hard it is to be in this atmosphere, what's going on this side, what's going on this side, players walking in offices, leaving, contracts that are not mutually beneficial to both sides or withstanding and holding to both sides. And Trump was like, what the heck? Like, that's a real thing? Like, this is
what do I need to do to fix it?
And that's how we're here, I think.
Yeah. And the coolest part is that, like you said, it can happen quickly. And especially in the academic world, that does not. Rarely does that exist, very much so. Next up, it's an article and somebody that we've talked about pretty consistently that does a great job for Yahoo Sports. That's
unbelievable,
Ross Dellinger. Yeah. Which, by the way, when you introduce me and say, you know, I work for Rivals, I guess that's now like Rivals / On Three something conglomerate. Together,
well, you're gonna have
now.
To tell me. What you're the one who gets paid by, not me.
I don't know yet. I guess it's I honestly don't know.
Well, I can't control that, brother. You gotta
give your boy ahead. It's still Rivals technically, but
you know what?
We'll get to what
Brent
it means.
Rollins, who writes for PFF, Pro Football Focus. There you go.
I still do that every now and then. But anyway, Ross writes for Yahoo Sports, and this, you know, looked at the power conference meetings and the commissioners and whatnot and the meeting they have. And the thing was, there's growing support, especially from the Big Ten and the SEC, for a 16-team bracket, which would include 4 automatic qualifiers for the SEC, 4 for the Big Ten, 2 ACC, 2 Big 12, 1 of the group of 6 now, as he terms it, and then 3 at large. Do you think that's where it's heading? And
100 million percent. Okay. So to summarize to what's going on with college football. Big Ten, SEC, right here. Everyone else way down here. And down here. They are the dictators. They are the ones who are going to make all the rules in college football. So, like, again, starting next year, that comes into fruition. So they're going to demand that they get more seats at the table. And guess what? They're going to go like this. Hey, balance of power. Make sure we got checks and balances. All right. Big Ten wants 4. SEC, what do you want? 4. Okay, you good with that? We're good with that. Okay, it's in place. All right, how does everybody else get to eat now? Like, we're going to eat first. We're going to take care of ours. And why is that a big deal? Because you get paid when you get to the college football playoff. Like, you get a big check for your university. Enormous check.
Well, doesn't it somehow, like, Notre Dame
somehow gets split as well.
Yes, it does split a little bit. Notre Dame's obviously the gold mine of all gold mines. But
let's talk about this. The reason why college football will continue to expand and is not going to stop at 12, just like we said it wouldn't when it would stop at the 4, at 6. Like, it's just not. Whatever number you pick, it's going to do more because it's more money. Like, if you go to 14, it's more money. If you go to 14, by the way, you have 2 buys, which would be interesting.
You're like
less
the NFL.
Less games played, less money, less TV products. We ain't going to 14. That means we're going to 16. That makes way more sense to me because now – every team would play a game. Every game is going to be on television. All of us love college football, and we don't give a dang. Like, I don't care. I know you're making a bunch of money. I'm happy. Like, I'm going to sit on my fat self couch, and I'm going to dial it up when we talk about it, and I absolutely love it. It's the best sport on the planet. Like, but no, 16 is definitely going to get to the point where, again, 4 SEC, 4 Big Ten, 2 ACC, 2 Big 12, so they get another one, which is good. And now you get to 10, and then you got the 1+1 model, right? Like, you're gonna continue to get the plus ones. Like, the group of 5 champion is gonna be in there. And by the way, Notre Dame just kind of you know, they talk about, it's interesting. Ross talks about these meetings and it's like, you know, the 10 decision makers and Notre Dame's AD, like they're in
and
there.
And Notre Dame.
Yes. And Notre Dame, like Notre Dame, if they finish in the top 14, they get an automatic spot at the table. Like they're in there. And you know what else is, so you have this, that's going to come to fruition and, you know, more teams are going to get in from the two conferences that, that run college football because they have the power. Like that's just what it is. And then the ACC and the Big 12 fitting in, and then the other ones coming in, you know, next. It's just, it's more money, you know, more television. And the interesting thing to me, Brent, do you like the college football selection committee? Yes or no? You a fan?
As it currently stands, no. I don't think people who are athletic directors of schools that have like bias. I think you have to have some level of non-biased individuals on a committee like that. And there's and athletic directors of the school. Like, what was it last? You had a couple years in a row. It was Michigan's athletic director.
Yeah.
Like that to me, you introduce bias whether you realize it or not.
And it's hard because you can't really know who's going to be in the mix. You know, like if you had somebody from SMU this year, you were like, we're pretty safe. But no, you're not. You know, I mean, so I think that is difficult. But here's another thing too. Selection committee for automatic qualifiers, like this becomes, they become marginalized, right? Like they're making way less decisions. And that's,
yes.
For you, that would be a good thing. For some people, maybe they like the selection committee and what they bring. I don't know. So
do you like that model, by the way, the auto bid, the sort of automatic qualifier model piece versus just, hey, who are the best 16 teams?
Yeah. You do like that?
No, I mean.
Oh, I thought you said you do like it.
No, I don't really have a defined opinion. I'm just more asking, but it's in the end, you just want the best 16 teams. But sometimes that might be half of those teams might be from one conference.
But you know what would make it better for Brent to be able to do this? Like, I think Brent Rollins would be more capable of doing that and giving you a more definitive answer. If we also now, if we're going to do this, like, let's have uniform scheduling.
Yeah.
Like, let's all play the same game. Let's all play the same conference games. But again, now let's play out of conference games against other teams from other conferences. So we have so much more crossover and we have more head to head. We have more data points. I know we've talked about that, but this is an awesome opportunity to accomplish that. Like, make those other games really, really cool. Make them matter. Bring back tradition, bring back good non-conference games. And yes, that hurts the group of five, but that's why they got their own little caveat. That is exactly why they're going to get someone in. The little guy is going to get in. So you have that taken care of, but that would make an easier way, I think, of, you know, deciding between A, B, and C, and D, and E, and F.
It's, and I don't know that you'll ever actually have uniform scheduling until you have equal numbers, and you're never going to have it because of the disparity, like the eighth team in one conference. And it's not so much that one conference is definitively better than the other. It's more about certain years. Hey, the eighth team in this one might be really good versus really, really bad in another. It's never going to be sort of fair, equal, exact science in that sense. But I do think it's interesting when you think about the historical perspective of all this, because for how many decades was it just a vote and you had an AP champion and the coaches poll champion? And then had the BCS with two teams from 98 until 2014? And then you had a four-team playoff for a decade or a little over, and now a little over, a decade basically. And then and then you go to 12, and then 2 years later, you're likely at 16. It's like the NFL. The NFL is going to go to 18 games, and they're going to go to, you know, however many playoff teams, and heck, they might even get to 20 games before you know it. Because money drives all that stuff.
Get rid of the preseason. I'm sure they'll do that, which nobody cares about anyway. So that wouldn't be a bad thing. But these are fun, man. I think, you know, the conference championship games will be an interesting discussion point with that.
Do you think they should go away?
Again, if you're going to add on more and more games to the body, yeah, I do. But they're going to say, but that's also going to be money. That's also going to be data points. But yes, that needs to go away. Like,
I agree. I think they need to go away.
We did talk about safety of kids at some point. Well, when you keep putting on more and more games and they're finishing with 20, 20 games in a regular season. That's a lot to ask, man. That's a lot.
Yes. No, I think definitively conference championship games and all this, it just needs to go away. And plus, that way you can start earlier. Like, I think at a certain point, you've got to realize that, hey, what does our calendar need to look like? And it gets later and later. That, to me, is not a good thing. By the way, do you know who's had a 16-team playoff at least since, I think, 1986?
You talking about FCS?
That would be the FCS.
Yeah.
Do you know how many they have now, by the way?
How many
playoff
teams?
Playoff teams.
24?
24 with 8 byes. And yeah. I look back because I was curious. The percentage of times that the either number one or number two seed won the championship?
92.
It's over 50%.
Oh.
It wasn't as high as you might. And recently, it's mainly because one team, no matter where they end up getting seated, they've won it because North Dakota State has won 10 of the last 14 championships.
Yeah.
But, like, can you see a world where major college football gets to 24 with 8 byes?
I can't. I'm not ready. I'm not ready there yet much. In my head. Like, that seems weird. Like, that seems strange to me. That seems...
Does that seem everybody get a trophy-ish?
Yeah, I don't love that idea. I mean, listen, the NFL...
16's your cap?
You think? I guess. I mean, I think so, man, because we can't get like 64, for gosh sakes, for the NCAA tournament. Oh, wait, we're past that now.
It's 68.
We're at like 85. I don't know, man. If you go AFC-NFC model... And you did that, and you did best teams getting byes. Like, I still could only justify. I'm not justifying putting 24 teams in. That's too many for me. Like, I just, man, I that's too much. I don't know. I guess it's just because the further we get away from the system that we have, the more we get accustomed to it, and then you think about it less and less. But right now, I'm not ready for that yet, Brent. Like that you just kind of you hit me upside the face with that. I was like getting too much
wasabi. It currently exists.
It's like getting way too much wasabi with a piece of sushi. It just, you weren't ready for it, and the eyes are watering. It's just ungood.
What's funny about, and I've said this before on other platforms, but in 1998, fall of my senior year of high school, I wrote a paper for my English 101 class. That was a dual enrollment college class, and it was about a 16-team playoff, how college football should have a 16-team playoff. This was in 1998, and all these years later, it might eventually get to that. I think bowl games are one that also is another area that I would love to see the bowl games be moved to just not non-existent in a way. Or if they're going to exist, be in the beginning of the year, and hey, your kickoff game is the Citrus Bowl.
Exhibition games?
Or no, just your first game of the season. It's a neutral site game, and it's the Citrus Bowl or the whatever. You know, it's the Cotton Bowl or something like that, that those bowl games exist, or just random week 2 game becomes this bowl game and somebody wants to sponsor it, because it's all about sponsorship anyway. It's not necessarily about and the TV money that comes with that. So I that's one I think the bowl games need to go away too, and that way it makes the portal potentially easier scheduling wise. That's, by the way, that's what Nick Saban and Cody Campbell and the Commission on College Athletics gets to figure out.
Yeah. But they, you know, there's a couple of things that have to change. The guardrails in the portal and the NIL and stuff, that all that stuff, that's got to get fixed. But all right, what we got next?
We didn't hit this one because we had too much fun talking about leadership last week.
It was fun.
And we mentioned some really good names and some people in the comments, by the way. A couple people give Coach Donnan a shout out in the comments of people that they listen to. When they talk, they listen. So we were looking at young coaches and who are going to be sort of that next up, either next up and from a national stage or next up to get hired by a big time school, all that sort of thing. Any caveats that you could think about, we left that open. And it's like, okay, what's your list of young coaches that are on the come up and we're going to be household names very soon, if not close to already?
Well, and I told you last time, I was like, I got a few off the radar that nobody talks about, like that that I know will be the next SEC coach. That's the way I put it to you. Like, there'll be an SEC coach, a Big Ten coach, and everybody's going to be like, all right, that's a good hire. But I also went just to the youngest, too, and, like, you know, youngest age to in their 30s. Like, there was a bunch of names in my 30s that I was – in the 30s that I was like, okay, like, Dan Lanning's 39. Like, that is strange to me. Like, that is to think about – I mean, he seems like he's 60. Just, like, heard Dan Lanning's name for so many years.
Yeah.
He's been around, and he's done it now, obviously, at Oregon for a number of years. But just – he feels like an older soul. He doesn't look like these kids that, like, Kenny Dillingham looks like a baby. Like, Spencer Danielson looked like a baby. Like, those two dudes are going to be
comparatively, yes.
They look like just young, and Dan doesn't look like that. But I remember Dan being a young coach at Georgia and watching him and just grow his family and then take the Oregon job and move. Like, he's on this list, and he, to me, is the – he's by far the next one I go – he's the next one to win a title. Like, he's the next one in his 30s to me – that stood out to win his title. And then I have other names as well. But is that how you felt?
Yeah, he's one. By the way, do you think it's the facial hair maybe? It gives him the older look.
Dan looks older. He just looks older. He's wiser.
He might not like that. But
anyway. Nah, it's fine.
Yeah. Dillingham and Danielson were the two to me that just, especially Dillingham. And that's why I didn't talk about him when we did the leadership stuff. But anytime he talks, I'm all ears, because
he legit looks like a physics teacher. I mean, if you saw him walking on campus at Georgia, you'd be like, Professor Dillingham.
Yeah. Or grad student Dillingham. He's one for me that his understanding of how all this plays, and also how the way he talks about caring about his players, those sort of things. That's what the leadership part of it.
He's 34.
I think he just turned 35, maybe.
Okay, just turned 35. So I'll never forget, we were in Eugene, Oregon, Dan Lanning's first year on the job, and this young 12-year-old dude walks in the office, and he's walking around the office, and walks up, and he's like, hey, Kenny Dillingham. And I was like, oh, you're the offensive coordinator. Oh, I'm like, how old are you? Literally, I was like, how old are you? And obviously at the time, he was probably like 30. And I was just like, holy cow. Like, and then I remember watching him draw up offense. And I was like, I watched your tape. And I said, you're good. Like, how do you do this? How do you do that? And he was just, man, just people skills, lock in on the eyes. And you're just like, okay, yeah, that dude's going to be solid. Like, you just, he knew what he wanted. You could tell he had assertion, commitment, like confidence, a confidence about him that you walk in a room as a head coach at 30 years old. Like, you got to have something to you. You got to be able to have the ability to relate and the ability to command. And obviously that's why he's one of those guys, when he speaks, we listen.
Yeah. By the way, one that we mentioned last week, and from a leadership standpoint, who's only 39 years old, is Marcus Freeman.
Yep.
That it's, he definitely looks like he's about that age. But one for me that I think is going to be maybe a next up, I don't want to get my tongue tied saying this. Kenny. I messed that up. Texas State coach. Badly. Yes.
You want to try again so everybody can actually understand what you're saying?
Coach Kenny. Coach Kenny, Texas State, who's 36. I just see him being that next up guy that maybe gets one of these Power Four jobs after having some success at the lower level.
Okay. I got three, like, I had Spencer Danielson written down, so did you, 36 years old, which is crazy. I also had Sharon Moore, who's 39 Michigan. Yep. And remember, and here's the thing about Dan Lanning and Marcus Freeman and Sharon Moore, who've now, like, well, we've heard more about Moore because of the suspensions, you know, and he's got opportunities to take over. But do you realize how much you learn and grow, like, on the job? And as you do it, like Kirby Smart, everyone wanted Kirby to win right away, and he did a great job building a team. It took a while. Like, it takes a while to really to uncover everything. Saban wasn't winning championships in his 30s. Like, that did not happen. Like, it takes time and to get over that hump. And those are guys that I mean, I feel like they will get over that hump. They will get there. They recruit at an elite level. You listen to them talk, they have that something about them that's just a little bit different, that commands a presence. They recruit, which you better be able to do. And that's why next on my list, I'll go to Jason Candle. I don't know if you had him on your list, but recruits at the best level in the MAC every year. A great record in his time at Toledo. I'm surprised he's been at Toledo as long as he has, but yeah, he lands the number one recruiting class year after year, gets guys out of the portal, develops. Like, you see guys from Toledo getting drafted. He's a guy that's got that. He's got that energy. He's not super duper. That's Summerall. He's on my list too, but he's still really young head coach. Another guy that I think once you start unturning dominoes and firing people at Power Four jobs, I think you'll hear his name.
You mentioned one that I had on my list as well, and Jason Candle's 45, by the way.
I thought he was younger than that.
John Summerall at Tulane, who's 42. I think he's another 100%. That Power Four is, and especially, by the way, what makes this unique now is because of how much power the Power Four conferences have. And as opposed to maybe being like, think about Luke Fickell when he was at Cincinnati making the 4-team playoff, and with that structure. But now with the way players, almost the entire NFL draft was Power Four conference players. Everybody's moving up. If you're any good at all, it's harder to build at that level. So I think he's one that will be there pretty quickly.
Yeah, he is. He's definitely next in that wave, and I think he's been very picky because he can be, because he knows he's going to be really good at Tulane. They were 9-2 last year, but it gets unbelievable talent from the portal. Again, you got to be able to recruit. Like, you got to be able to do that. And also too, Brent, when you see guys going into the portal that are from Tulane going to major universities, he's doing something right. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, he's taking his talent, and he is absolutely taking them, developing them to the point where they're getting stolen because he can't afford them. And, he's one of the highest paid guys in that division for a reason. He'll be an SEC coach. Like, you can write that down. Like, I think he'll be a guy that's in the SEC. I think it'll make a lot of sense where he lives right now in New Orleans, understanding the Southeast. There's a real deal to that. Like, I think it's going to happen. Who you got next?
Alex Golesh at USF. Who's 41, was at Tennessee with Heupel, and has been at USF for a couple years now. And they compete. No matter, like, them against Alabama last year, he was, I thought, one call away, one sort of go for it call away from really making that game very interesting against Alabama.
Alabama also fumbled like 4 times in the red zone, which gave him a chance to be in it.
Got sacked a bunch and had a bad game in and of themselves. But I do think he's one, especially when you look at that offensive system, it typically gets you hired as, hey, I'm an offensive guy. So I think he's another one for me.
I got one I guarantee you is not on your radar. 1,000,000% is not on your radar. Zach Kittley.
I at least have his name written down, and only for one reason, though. I think he's the youngest head coach.
He's 33
in college football. Yes.
Yes. Well, I have
at Florida Atlantic, by the way. At Florida Atlantic, he's at Florida Atlantic. FAU.
Yes, he's an Owl. Hasn't coached a single game at Florida Atlantic, by the way. But was Texas Tech offensive coordinator or OC QB coach. Just the young and up. I've heard enough about this guy. I'm just telling you, like, from coaches in this business, that who's the next guy? Who's a guy that you really respect? Who's a great play caller that people don't talk about? And then you hear his name and you're like, okay, what? That dude literally is 33 years old. He's a baby. Like, but getting his chance, he's obviously worked with a good program with Texas Tech. I think coming in young, he'll be really, really good. He'll be a guy down the road after he proves himself, an offensive guy, put up points, get matchups, one of those young guns that can come in and energize a program and bring something unique and bring something different.
Well, you think about FAU as a you hate to say stepping stone, but it was for Lane Kiffin. Like, that's where he went and sort of got right in a way, had success as the head coach, as the person who's, you know, running the ship and making decisions and leading the program. It's a great place to do it because you can throw a rock in, you know, a few miles from you and get and have some really good football players all around speed. You in and around Miami. Yes.
Well, you're getting that speed. I mean, just, it makes you a really good coach. Like, you can draw up great plays, but when you ain't got dudes that can run, it makes it really, really hard. Like, I at least can take a dumb kid and I can tell him to run a go and go win. Like, it's, you can be the smartest kid in the world, man. But if you can't run, it's hard. Like, you got to have some athletic ability to play this game. And so when you live in a state when there's so much of it, like there's so much to go around, it makes it a lot easier to go down the road, recruit a kid. You were like, yeah, I'm recruiting this kid. And you go to a game and you're like, who the heck is that? Like, where's that guy from? Like, how do I not know about him? Because he can fly, he can run, he can make big plays.
It's a great place to find kids who maybe blossomed as a senior that weren't on anybody's radar. And then you get that kid and it's really a power four talented level kid that now becomes a star or you know, big time player for you at that level. And then,
you used to be able to keep those guys, develop them and then go win at a high level and be really good. Now you keep them for 1 year and then somebody else goes, oh, you found a gem. You found a good one. Okay, hold on. How much? You know, this make that what I would say would be the frustrating thing about coaching at that level. I mean, that's just
yes.
Like you go find that gem. Oh my gosh, it makes me really good at my job. I find that gem and then 1 year later he's gone. Like that's got to be frustrating because you want to be like, dude, did you see what I saw this in you before they did? I got this out of you. But now you're going to coach. They're giving me this many zeros. Okay, I'd go too. Like, can I come with you? I mean, you kind of get it.
Yeah, you 100% get it. Some other random, not random, but coach ages. Mike Norvell is 43. Rhett Lashley is 41. Fran Brown at Syracuse is 33. Rhett at SMU. And then one that you might think is a little older, but he's not. Lincoln Riley is still just 41 years old.
Kid whiz, man.
I mean, he's had almost a career. When you think about him as a head coach at Oklahoma and then USC, which, by the way, so I'll maybe that's how I last question. How are you feeling about the Trojans heading into 2025? A positivity scale. If 10 was, I'm very positive, obscenely positive. Clemson, I'm all in. Clemson level positive is 10.
Pollock's already all in on the Tiger, baby. I've already said that. 6.5. I still think nobody's going to debate Lincoln Riley as a play caller and as a coach. I think the biggest thing was the, you know, college football kind of changed and the infrastructure of college football changed and you got to kind of change and zig and zag with it. And he took the USC job, which did not help him from eyeballs perspective, from negativity perspective. Like a lot of that came his way, rightfully or not. He got a lot of money. He got broke off. But to leave a perennial power like Oklahoma, one of the best programs in the country, was a big move. And with it, you knew was going to come some of this. And you went to a less stable place, to a place that hasn't sustained success and been up very up and down, and you've seen struggles, and then you go to a new conference, which is hard. Yeah, It was a tough battle for him to fight with everything going on, and then all of a sudden you need resources, and I need you to invest in the program like other places do, and that's not always the case. So I think he's done an okay job. You've seen some moments, but it's definitely – you can't go from what you went from in Oklahoma going to the playoffs, Heisman Trophy candidates, winning Heisman Trophies, and then all of a sudden after Caleb Williams – and Caleb Williams was pretty dang good. He won a Heisman Trophy. That's pretty dang good. But he still never figured out how to put an offense together with a defense. And that's been his biggest downfall, is being able to construct – listen, he's not alone. Like, great coaches have to learn – Kirby Smart had to learn how to get an offense. Nick Saban had to learn how to develop an offense and involve, you know, offensively. A lot of times you have one component you're really, really good at, and the other side has to catch up and keep up, or it's not your strength or your specialty. And then you find that guy that brings you along that comes beside you, and then all of a sudden, Todd Monken for Kirby that takes you up over the over to the next level.
That's all I got for today.
That's all you got?
I don't know if there's – I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of news that'll break in the time that, you know, that we record this versus the time that we you actually see it tonight. But, yeah,
tends to usually happen. But
especially recently, by the way. Especially recently.
It happens. But I saw where were we ranked? We were ranked something like kind of decent, Brent. What was our ranking in
on the Apple Podcasts. Yeah, it was top 10 recently. Yeah. At least the last time I looked, it was like 8th or 9th.
I pulled it up this morning on the treadmill while my wife was right there, and you could go through like the different things and click on it, and you clicked on football, and we were like the second one listed. And I was like, how about that? That's pretty cool, honey. Like, she was like, yeah, you're still a loser. I was like, thank you, babe. I love you too. Thank you for the support. But now we appreciate all y'all continuing to listen, to like, to subscribe, do all that fun stuff that nobody likes to talk about during a podcast. But we'll be back Wednesday, and I'm sure something will break. If you guys got ideas to send to us, send them our way on socials and for topics and stuff, because we're getting closer and closer, man. Like we're getting closer to the fun. Like everything's basically locked in. We've been through spring ball. The rosters are intact. No more trades happening, which was crazy. UCLA and Tennessee making a trade this offseason. That was nuts, but we're getting closer, and we'll keep dialing in college football because we absolutely love this.